Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Television writer, producer, and director Nell Scovell was almost always the only woman in the television writers' rooms when she worked there, and she's worked on several popular shows and has written some famous jokes. Maybe you remember this one from a presidential candidate back in 2012 comparing himself to former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney.
Ultimately, though, tonight's not about the disagreements Governor Romney and I may have. It's what we have in common, beginning with our unusual names. Actually, Mitt is his middle name. I wish I could use my middle name.
That, of course, is President Barack Hussein Obama telling a joke that was written by Nell Scovell. Scovell's also known for her work with Sheryl Sandberg. She co-authored the book Lean In: Women, Work, and the Will to Lead. But Nell is with us today to talk about her new book, which is titled Just the Funny Parts, and a few hard truths about sneaking into the Hollywood Boys Club. Nell, thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So you have credits writing for The Simpsons and Sabrina the Teenage Witch, David Letterman, and your book is a lot about your early days in the television business. And I can't even say how many times you wrote about how often you were the only woman in the writer's room. What was it like?
It wasn't uncomfortable. I mean, that was where I wanted to be. I think I was singled out, sometimes in good ways, sometimes in bad ways. So even in my first job, I knew that the odds were against me as a woman.
You say in the book that it was sort of an open secret, these stories about harassment. So you knew that this was happening all around you.
You know, when David Letterman goes on his show in 2009 and announces to the world that he has had sex with women he worked with, you know, that was a surprise to no one who had worked at the show. So that was an open secret. And it's an old story in Hollywood. You know, there's even a cutesy name for it called the casting couch, which does sound so much nicer than the sexual harassment sofa.
In the book, you describe a sexual encounter that you had with a head writer on an early TV show that you worked on. The encounter, consensual, I guess, but later you wrote about how uncomfortable that was for you. Looking back on it now, in the book, I think you quote Oscar Wilde, and he's saying everything in the world is about sex except sex. Sex is power. So looking back on that now, what would you tell your younger self?
Right. I would say I was less complicit and more compliant. And there's a little bit of a distinction. This was someone who had the power to hire and fire me, who made an advance. He, you know, when our now president talked about how he liked to just start kissing women, that's how it began with me, where I had no time to react. And a recent study just last month said that 94% of women in Hollywood say that they have experienced sexual harassment or abuse by an older, more powerful boss. And 21% said that that included performing a sexual act. So, you know, I have a lot of company. And even though when I first wrote this story, it was before the Me Too movement, you know, I am really glad that I'm in the position that I can speak out and add my voice to this very loud chorus.
Hmm. You know, in 2009, David Letterman admitted to having sexual relationships with women on his staff. And you wrote a piece for Vanity Fair where you, as the second woman writer on the show, recalled working in what
right.
you called...
And the first who wasn't his girlfriend.
But you know, you came out and you said this was a hostile, sexually charged environment. Why did you want to write that? And I'm wondering, you know, in the book you talk about sort of the reaction to that piece. What happened?
The Letterman story was very odd. If you recall, he was being blackmailed by the boyfriend of an assistant he'd been having an affair with. So he was a victim, and I do feel a lot of sympathy for him being put into that position. I'm sure it was very scary. But he did get a pass for this underlying behavior. And I remember watching The View the next day and hearing Barbara Walters say, well, Dave is a very attractive man. Where else is he going to meet women except the office? And nobody seemed very upset about this question. Was it always consensual? If it was, were there benefits people gained? And also, were there punishments to people who didn't go along, right? Those are just, you know, until you investigate, you don't know the answer to that. But that aside, I also wanted to do this pivot to talk about gender discrimination in the writer's room. And that wasn't just at Letterman. That was also at The Tonight Show starring Jay Leno. And neither of those shows had any female writers. Zero. Like, you literally could not do worse when it came to diversity. And I'll also add that in 33 years on the air, the Letterman show never had a single writer of color. So as much as, you know, I felt other people needed to tell their stories to address the sexual harassment issue, you know, I had only witnessed it as sexual favoritism, which is a subset of sexual harassment where you don't have to be the target in order to be affected by the atmosphere in the workplace. But I did have this strong belief that more women needed to be at these shows, not only because that's the fair thing to do, but because it would make those shows funnier.
Right. So what happened? What was the fallout from you writing that? This was 9 years ago, and you're talking about the environment. I just want to point that out to some folks. It wasn't all that long ago. So what was the fallout from that?
Well, the good news was that within the next 6 months, Letterman had hired a female writer, and not the next one. They actually had written a piece saying that almost certainly the next writer they hired would be a female, which it wasn't, but they did get around to it. And Leno also hired a female writer. So that was positive. You know, yay, we brought tokenism back.
Right. The New York Times describes you as a one-woman lobby group for female writers in late night. What do you think?
These jobs are important because they're entry-level jobs. They're a place where you can really learn how to write jokes under pressure. You know, when I was working on Letterman, we would do the top 10 lists, and you had 45 minutes to just scrawl as many jokes as you could think. So these are really good jobs for people who want to then go on and create sitcoms, direct movies, you know, whatever they want to do. So if you shut women out of these jobs or people of color, you're really not just blocking them from jobs, you're blocking them from entire careers.
You know, in the book, though, you write about being the showrunner for Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and the show didn't have any writers of color, and you turned down an idea to hire a black actress as one of Sabrina's aunts, and you said you didn't make enough of an effort and that was a mistake. Well, what's it like to look back on that moment now?
Well, it's embarrassing. It was 1996, and I should have done better. It wasn't without any diversity. We had the top four producing titles were all female. So the way I see it was I was ahead of the curve on gender, but I am solidly on the curve for intersectionality. But what I wanted to model was a behavior where I don't get defensive. I admit it was a mistake, and I hope to do better in the future.
You're also known for co-writing Lean In with Sheryl Sandberg, the book Lean In, and you've written that Lean In was the book that you wish that you read at 25 and not helped write at 52.
But
you know, a lot of the values in Lean In feel like it seems like you did live some of those values. Can you explain that a little bit? What's the message to younger women here?
One of the reasons for writing the book was that I feel like I'm a lean-in case study. And because it was in Hollywood and pop culture, there's more interest in my life. So Cheryl famously said that the most important career decision that a woman makes is who her partner is. So I really nailed that. I married a guy and had two kids with him, and he stayed home with our children. He was the primary parent. He was a wonderful caregiver. And he didn't just do it because, there were financial reasons. Although there were, he was an architect. I was a TV writer. And I made more money than he did. But he did it because he wanted to.
And so it's your partner. It's choosing a partner. And I guess I wonder, what advice would you give to young women who are listening to this and thinking that they might want to break into the field? I read in the book that you wrote, I quickly discovered that in Hollywood, the glass ceiling is not actually made of glass. Instead, it's made of that Terminator metal that shatters and reconstitutes and reforms. I mean, is that a reality for a lot of women?
I think it is. And we have plenty of examples of women who have succeeded, myself included. But that's one of the reasons why I wrote the book, which is to say, look, I made it, but it was hard and it didn't need to be that hard. And if I can make it a little less hard for others, that's what my hope is.
Are you hopeful about what we're seeing with the attention, Me Too and Frances McDormand, and the attention that's being given to including women and promoting gender equality? Are you hopeful? Do you think we're seeing real change here?
So Frances McDormand ends her Oscar-winning speech with this, two words, inclusion rider. And everyone in Hollywood went, what? I actually know what it is because I'm on the board of the Annenberg Inclusion Institute, which is run by Stacey Smith. It is the thing that gives me the most hope. So what the rider does is it creates goals. It sets goals with the production company that says, we're going to hire these many people of color, these people with disabilities, these members of the LGBTQ community. And if we don't hire these people at the goals we had set, we accept a penalty. And this is so key because unless you hold someone's feet to the fire, there's always the ability to make excuses. There's so much lip service. And I do think it's sincere. Most people want more diversity, but they claim there's not enough out there. I say it's not a pipeline problem. It's a broken doorbell problem. There's so much talent that's on the doorstep ringing the bell and no one's opening the door.
Nell, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
Nell Scovell is a television writer, director, and producer. She'll be at the Cambridge Public Library next Monday in conversation with Errol Morris. There's more information about that at our website, radioboston.org. That's it for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.